Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Welcome to Murder Mile. Today, I'm standing on Allenby Road in Southall, UB1. 1 mile west of the last sighting of Alice Gross. 2 miles north of the Chohan family murders. 4 roads southeast of where the unidentified body parts were found in the canal. And a short walk from the old grey woman. Coming soon to Murder Mile. Set on a busy residential street, Dormers Wells High School is an all-inclusive secondary and sixth form. It's a quiet street, but as with all kids, once the little darlings get all sugared up, they dash about like Tasmanian devils with a serious case of the bum grapes and squeal like Spinal Tap's roadie has set the volume on all of their voices to 11. It's such a horrific din. The collective cacophony can make cats wince, bats weep, and those of us with tinnitus actually wish that the awful humming in our ears would increase. But what there isn't is a memorial to the massacre and the bloodshed which occurred on Wednesday the 11th of November, 1987, when murder came to this quiet little street. Rebuilt in 2011, a £30 million regeneration project has replaced the old high school with a thoroughly modern one. And although the sounds of squealing and screaming still remain, what it erased was the tragic memory of one of Britain's only school shootings. A mass murder, which was barely reported and is almost forgotten. My name is Michael. I'm your tour guide. And this is Murder Mile. Episode 247. The Dormers Wells Massacre. What follows is based on the declassified court records. Gun control. Before 1900, almost every British citizen could carry a gun. Thankfully, seeing sense, in 1903, the first permit and age restrictions limited the sale of weapons to children and some teenagers. By 1911, a mandatory firearm certificate was introduced, meaning you had to have a legitimate reason to own a gun. In 1936, short-barreled shotguns and fully automatic weapons were outlawed. And by 1946, the police no longer deemed self-defense a valid excuse to own one. And yet it wasn't until 1953 that carrying a firearm outside of supervised and permitted areas was made illegal. None of these controls happened by mistake, as the laws which made Britain a more civilized and safer country were all exacerbated by a series of gut-wrenching tragedies perpetuated by gun owners. On the 13th of March 1996, in Dunblane, a small town outside of Stirling in Scotland, 43-year-old former scout leader Thomas Hamilton entered Dunblane Primary School armed with 4 handguns. angry at being blacklisted, having committed sex crimes against minors. He opened fire, wounding 15, and murdering in cold blood teacher Gwen Mayer and 16 of her young pupils, who all aged between 5 and 6. It remains the deadliest mass shooting in UK history. And so appalled were the people that Parliament banned the ownership of handguns, all semi-automatic weapons, and required a mandatory registration for all shotgun owners. Since 1997, 27 years ago, there hasn't been a single school shooting in the United Kingdom. But it wasn't a single mass shooting which led to this change in the law. As just a few years earlier, a little-known massacre occurred at Dormers Wells High School. The target, some say, was a guru. On the 7th of December 1953, in Batala, the 8th largest city in the Punjab, Maharaj Darshan Das Ji was born as the second child of 3 siblings. For some followers of the Sikh faith, Darshan Das was seen as a guru, but with its more orthodox followers only regarding the first 10 leaders of Sikhism as the true gurus. For others, Das was little more than a fake sage in what was a politically volatile time for Sikhs. Held by his followers as a spiritual master, it was said that his birth was prophesied in Baibala Janansa Kai, the biographies of the founder of Sikhism, which states that the light of Guru Nanak Dev Ji will reappear in the town of Batala and will be born into a Jat Brahmin family, which he was. With his life story chronicled by his worshippers, it is said that, at the time of his birth, a snake dropped onto his bed and immediately vanished. That brought his parents' attention to 7 locks in his hair, which resembled the 7-headed great snake. As word spread about the boy and his unusual locks of hair, yogis, peers and fakirs would stop and see the young Maharaj sitting outside on the doorstep, in which they would bow and pay their respects to him. For many Sikhs, Das was not an ordinary child, as when he visited a nearby eye hospital, his chronicler state, he would comfort patients with his polite words, and anything he said to them would come true. In 1966, when Das was just 13 years old, while feeding the family's buffalo with a bale of hay which was too heavy to lift, a figure in a white robe with a long white beard, the man asked him to pay attention to the work he was born to do and told him that the weight which he was struggling to lift was nothing compared to the weight of the world he was destined to lift upon his shoulders. In his teenage years, it was said, at night, when he was walking down the street, people would notice a light radiating from him, almost as if he was carrying a lamp. If someone was sick in their home, he would enter the doorway and the sick person would immediately feel better. In 1970, age 17, it was said that Das received a second spiritual message, stating that if he wanted to be true, that his true vocation was the service of mankind. So intense was that experience that he remained unconscious for 3 days, and later said by a priest to have been touched by a divine grace. After 40 days of fasting, he knew what he had to do. Giving his first sermon on the 15th of August 1971, this became known as the Day of Enlightenment amongst his worshippers. As over the coming years, as his unique healing powers grew, so did his followers. For many Sikhs, his divinity was proven when on the 16th of February 1980, the Punjab was swathed in the darkness of a solar eclipse, which many believe brings about everything from bad omens to blindness. Reassuring his faithful that no ill would befall them, and it didn't, Das announced the founding of a new faith, Das Dharam, which means service to humanity, and there he laid down its rules and its practices. To his followers, Darshan Das was a holy man who was benevolent and peaceful. But to the more orthodox Sikhs, he was a fake and a heretic. Das first came to England on the 23rd of December 1979, 1 year before he founded Das Dharam. And in 1982, having established his first religious centre in Handsworth, Birmingham, he split his time between visiting his followers and giving sermons in school halls right across the United Kingdom. Seen by Orthodox Sikhs as a self-styled guru who was disliked by the fundamentalists for his moderate views, Das was a controversial figure during an increased time of infighting and divide in the Sikh faith. As with many of the world's biggest issues, it began in the 1930s, when the governance of India was handed back to those it rightfully belonged to, after we, the British, had ravaged its resources, looted its treasures, and left the country in chaos. With each religious group vying for political and financial supremacy, a Khalistan was proposed, which split the Sikh faith between those who wanted an ethno-religious sovereign state for the Sikhs in the Punjab and those who wanted to remain as part of an independent and unified India. Many wars were fought, many lives were lost, and many rivers of blood and tears were spilt. 1984, 3 years before Das's murder, was a particularly turbulent year for Sikhs, as from the 1st to the 10th of June, Operation Blue Star sought to remove militants and separatists from the holiest Sikh site, the Golden Temple. Seen as a barbaric tragedy, which left 554 Sikh militants and civilians dead, with 83 dead amongst the government forces and 236 wounded, a figure which is still hotly disputed, it marked the start of a bloody insurgence in the Punjab, and it radicalised further its more militant Sikhs. Having condemned the violence by Sikhs fighting for an independent state, with his life frequently in danger, in 1986, a man armed with a sword stormed into a prayer meeting with the intent to kill Darshan Das. That day, his killer failed. But it is said that Das foretold of his own death, as just moments before he was murdered, his chroniclers state, "Someone in the congregation asked, 'What is death?' And he replied, 'Wait 2 minutes, you'll see it with your own eyes.'" Das's life was dangling by a thread, as threats came thick and fast. But the coverage he received in the press only angered fundamentalist Sikhs even further. In the Sunday Mirror, dated the 7th of September 1986, it states, "John Kensett, he's been miraculously cured and has cancelled his heart operation after meeting the guru. John said, 'Darshan Das touched my hands, recited a prayer, and told me to repeat it each night.'" Although a heart specialist later commented in the article, "I think it would be wrong to put too much credence on an Indian holy man." The mystical Indian guru with the healing powers had come to Britain. And although some believed it, some didn't, and some were scared of it, whereas others were angered by his fake miracles. In the Sunday Mercury, dated the 15th of November 1987, 4 days after his death. It read, "An unnamed Birmingham businessman claimed he lost his family, his parents and his sister, who had fallen under the influence of Darshan Das. He said the self-proclaimed guru preyed on the fears of women. He alleged that Mrs. Das sold bottles of water for £11, claiming they had healing powers, and demanded cash donations for his sect instead of traditional Sikh gifts such as salt, sugar and flour." Although when asked, Chief Inspector Keith Newell of the Westmorland Police said, "We have never had any complaints about activities at the temple." As a precaution, Das's home in Handsworth was protected by alarms, locks and CCTV. Only his killers wouldn't kill him in bed in Birmingham, but in a school in Southall. Rajinder Singh Bhatt was a 37-year-old Orthodox Sikh who believed in violence to achieve the Khalistan. Born in the Punjab in 1950, having come to England in 1972 and later losing his job at a plastics factory in Feltham 1 year before, being unemployed, by 1987 he was living on Burns Avenue in Southall, just a few streets away from the Dormers Wells High School, where every Wednesday, Darshan Das preached. The plan was Bhatt's idea, stating,
"Das used to read the prayers out of our Guru Granth Sahib,
the Sikh scriptures. Calling himself a guru and being a Sikh, I couldn't bear this. He was spoiling our culture. Any person can read the prayers from the Guru Granth Sahib, but he can't call himself a guru." To get closer to his target, and to assess the site of this soon-to-be assassination, Bhatt attended several of Das's Wednesday evening prayer meetings at the Dormers Wells High School across the 4 months prior. As a local Sikh, he blended in, and it gave him ample opportunity to assess the room, its exits, its timings, and to get close up to his intended target. But with the congregation ranging from 150 to 300 worshippers, he knew he needed an accomplice with the same political beliefs as him. His name was Manjit Singh Sundar, a 25-year-old factory worker from Sandwell, who Bhatt knew well, with both men being members of fundamentalist groups within the International Sikh Youth Federation. Bhatt's intention was sketchy at best. As to the police, he confessed that he intended to murder Das, stating,
"We thought if he called himself Guru again, we'd shoot him. I have been to these sessions many times, thinking he would stop, but did not. That's why I shot him."
Later changing this to,
"I thought I would hit him in the legs."
A statement which went against all of the evidence. But later at his trial, he changed the story again to,
"We plan to use the guns to force the audience to listen to our words."
On an undetermined date in August 1987, although he'd been unemployed for a year and wasn't on any benefits, either on a street in Southall or outside of a Sikh temple in Handsworth, as different sources give different accounts,
"I met a black man," Bhatt said,
"and for £250, roughly £880 today, he bought a single-barreled Soviet-made sawn-off shotgun, a .2 caliber handgun, and a .38 Smith & Wesson." Bhatt and Sundar were ready to kill. But did Bhatt save money for this, or was he funded by someone else? Wednesday the 11th of November 1987 was a typical British day as a cold wet drizzle howled amongst the biting wind. That day, from noon onwards, Bhatt and Sundar drove a second-hand car said to be a Datsun, which they'd purchased as a getaway car, and drove it around Southall with the guns in the boot. Driving to an isolated spot, Bat and Sunder loaded the guns, which they split amongst each other. Sunder had the sawn-off shotgun and the pistol, said to be a Luger, and Bart had the 38 Smith & Wesson. Which may seem unfair, but with the pistol holding just 6 bullets and the shotgun holding just 2, Bart's 38 revolver was loaded with 6 bullets, and in his jacket he'd stashed 8 spare if he needed them. At a tree, Bart test-fired his revolver, and with Sunder strapping the shotgun and the pistol to his chest, and Bart hiding the pistol in his waist strap, they parked on Allenby Road at 9 p.m. and headed in. Dressed in a black and brown turban, a shirt, trousers and a grey jumper, Bart and his gun-toting ally entered the sports hall and blended in amongst the throng of worshippers who all sat on the floor. As part of the planned format, with the evening being one of 3 mandatory prayer times for Sikhs, from a slightly elevated dais, Das sat and recounted songs, prayers and hymns from the Holy Scripture. And for educational purposes, a tape recorder captured the sermon and the massacre itself on a cassette. At roughly 9:30 p.m, with the prayer meeting coming to an end, some of the congregation said Bart looked ill at ease, having shifted uncomfortably as Das came amongst the congregation to talk to the people, to answer the questions. And Bart said,
making them bow to his feet.
But it was as Das spoke the words, "We imagine in Punjabi," that Sunder suddenly shouted, "You dog!" and pulled out his sawn-off shotgun. From those 2 words to the final shot, the Dormer's World massacre lasted just 16 seconds. Having stood up, both men fired down the sides of the silenced congregation. Unsure what was going on, it happened so fast that the crowd was still seated when Sunder blasted the shotgun at Das from just 6 feet away. And although the 2 men were almost within touching distance, Sunder missed. Whether through nerves, fear, or just bad marksmanship, as the crowd panicked and the terrified masses fled towards the nearest exits, as Sunder cocked his shotgun's hammer, a group of Das's most faithful dived on the shooter, flooring him before he could get his last shot off and disarming him of the shotgun. Seeing the uprising and fearing for his life, Bart held the pistol in the air as if to warn the crowd, but still they surged. And as Sunder struggled, having pulled out the pistol, he fired in panic, shooting 45-year-old Yoga Singh of Southall, who was a writer of Psalms, who just seconds earlier had punched him. Seeing Sunder struggle, as the crowd cornered, floored, and beat him with chairs, as the crowd surged towards him, Bart also fired in panic, shooting 41-year-old telecoms engineer Satvant Singh Panesar in the chest, and 53-year-old shopkeeper Dharan Singh Bimbram in the leg, with both men being unarmed. Bart later claimed, in a cowardly, self-serving way,
"I didn't want to kill him,"
meaning Das.
"But when the people jumped on my friend, I lifted up my pistol in the air, hoping it would stop them from doing what they were doing. But as a maniac grabbed my arm, he pulled it down, and it went off by mistake."
Which the recording, eyewitness testimony, and even his own confession would disprove. Later stating in court,
when I fired at Das and was stepping back. My foot slipped, and it was then that they caught me. Shots got fired then, because my finger was on the trigger.
Although witnesses state,
Bat jumped on the stage, pulled out the .38 from his waistband, and from a few feet away, he shot Das.
With a single shot entering his skull at the back of his ear, the bullet penetrated his head, and having ricocheted off the Petrus bone, the hardest bone in the skull, its deathly sharp fragments shot down into his chest, penetrated his vital organs like his lungs and his heart, and filled the cavity with blood. With Bat floored by Das's unarmed worshippers, as he tried to flee, he too was knocked to the ground, beaten with a microphone stand, stamped on, and he says stabbed.
Then I lost consciousness.
And although he would claim
they tried to kill me,
an examination determined that his cuts and bruises were merely superficial. In total, 12 shots were fired, 8 of them missed, and the entire massacre ended after just 38 seconds. Police and ambulances from nearby Southall Police Station and Ealing Hospital were on site in minutes. The scared congregation were ushered to safety, and although chaotic, a crime scene was established. Inspector Geoffrey Bryden and Detective Inspector Paul Seacombe obtained testimony from more than 150 witnesses. The guns were retrieved, fingerprints were found, and both shooters were questioned. Of the 4 men shot, with the bullet entering Bimbra's leg, he made a good recovery and was released from hospital 9 days later. Yoga Singh, the Psalms writer who always accompanied Das, was shot in the stomach and died 5 hours later after surgery. Panesar, the British telecoms engineer, remained critical for 2 weeks. And although he was transferred to Charing Cross Hospital to be put on a kidney machine, he died, leaving a widow, a 9-year-old son, and 2 twin daughters aged just 5. And although he was rushed to nearby Ealing Hospital, which is just 1.5 miles away, being unconscious and barely breathing, owing to a bullet wound to the head and massive internal bleeding, 33-year-old Darshan Das, the prophesied guru of Das Dharam, was declared dead on arrival. As expected, some sects of Sikhism condemn the murders as despicable. And although the Punjab Times reported that the International Sikh Youth Federation, who both Sundar and Bat were members of, had praised the efforts of the murderers, they later denied any connection with the incident. Arrested and charged with 3 counts of murder and 1 of attempted murder, Sundar was said to be cooperative, while Bat claimed that he didn't speak English, which he did. He repeatedly lied in his statements, and although he was declared fit to be interviewed, he routinely complained that he had a headache. Given the risk of retaliation that these murders had unleashed, Bat and Sundar were transported in an armoured van to the Old Bailey, where their 14-day trial began on Monday the 20th of February 1989. With Manjit Sundar pleading guilty to the murder of Darshan Das and the manslaughter reduced to the lesser charge of malicious wounding of Satvan Panesar. On the 9th of March 1989, he was sentenced to life in prison with a minimum of 20 years, plus 8 years to be served concurrently. And although the trial almost collapsed, as at an after-dinner speech, the judge, Mr. James Miskin QC, made racially charged references to black people being nignogs, and of the Dormer's Wells killers as being murderous Sikhs, which he denied and was later blamed on early-onset Alzheimer's. Rajinder Bhat was sentenced to life for a minimum of 30 years, plus 10 years to be served concurrently. Having served their sentences at HMP Franklin, Bhat returned to India, where for the murders, he was honored at the Akal Bhat Temple in the Punjab. As of today, Bhat lives as a free man. And the schism among Sikhs still rages on.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So there we go, folks. Welcome to Extra Mile, the unscripted, unedited bit. If you're new to the show, this is kind of the bit afterwards. I have a little chat. We do some quiz questions about this episode, then we dive into some extra stuff that may not have made it in the episode. Don't forget, as always, I haven't edited the episode yet, so bits that we may talk about may be in the episode, they may not be. I'm just going to take your little hat off. There we go. Little hat is off. Oh, blimey, folks. Oh, tired. It's evening and I'm not normally recording in the evening, but that's an evening record. Oh, that was a difficult one. That was a difficult one because there's lots in there that... It was really interesting because it was one of those cases where ages ago I thought to myself, I'd love to cover that case, but there's almost nothing about it. If you type in the Dormer's Wells shooting, there's almost nothing on the internet. It kind of... There's like about... 10 lines on Wikipedia, most of which is incorrect. And there's bits and pieces in the kind of the news archives, but not very much. So I started digging and digging and digging. And then I realized that with Bhat, his appeal records were actually in the archives. And it's the great thing about an appeal record is that you actually get most of the details from the original court itself. So even though the court records and the police files aren't available, the appeal records were. So I was able to get a lot of the original information about this case to find out what was going on and what had happened. Because what is out there is a bit messy. It really is. So that was really interesting. So there we go. What's going on in my world? Oh, this is all very exciting. I injured my back. As always, walking the other day, I was getting Eva's cocktails for it. I'll just be honest. And then while I was editing the last episode, Jack the Shitter, you're welcome. I put a hot water bottle on my back, and I didn't realise that I think it must have burst a bit, and that it had got on my skin, and it was. It was nice and toasty. I wasn't really burning. I wasn't really having a problem. And then I put my fingers on my back, and it was all bibbly bobbly. It looked like kind of the elephant man's head. It was really bibbly bobbly. And I looked in the mirror and thought, oh, shit. And then I called up my stepmom, who was a former nurse. And she was like, yeah, you need to go to A&E for that because if they burst, and they were huge blisters, like big blisters bigger than your eyeballs. She was like, yeah, if they burst, there's a high risk of infection on that, so you need to go to A&E. So I did. I went to A&E. Thank you to the NHS. This, of course, was all free. Thank you very much. Oh, what a lovely country we live in where we've got free healthcare, but not for much longer, given that the government's trying to sell off as much of it as it can to all of their buddies, because they're a massive bunch of arseholes. I went there. I went to two local hospitals at 5 a.m. Nice and empty. No one was there. It was wonderful. Just me, a homeless man, and someone who was walking uncomfortably. So either they'd got back problems like me, or they'd inserted something where they shouldn't have inserted it. But that does happen in hospitals. So that's been fun. Thank you to new Patreon supporters. Thank you to Jenny Geddes and Roberto Pini. So I hope I got your names wrong. I really do. Thank you to Jenny and thank you to Roberto. Thank you for becoming Patreon supporters. As with everyone, don't forget, you can become a Patreon supporter for as little as £3 a month. You get lots of goodies with that. You get a little video. You get or loads of photos that I don't share anywhere else. You get the unedited recording script for this episode. You also have, for everyone, a new thing I introduced this year called Bad Nanometers, which where there's extra pieces of documentation that's really interesting. Like with last week, I think it was the week before, the Gene Stafford case, where we got the potential reference to the fact that it could have been John Reginald Christie, who was one of her former clients. I actually read out some the original statements there, so you actually know whether it could have been Reginald Christie or not. So there you go. Lots of really interesting stuff that I'm never going to share with anyone else. That is solely for Patreon. So if you want to become a Patreon subscriber, please do. I think they're still doing the god-awful free trials. You can have a poke around if you want, or you can just become a proper patron, and that would be very much appreciated. Let's do some quiz questions. I'm not going to make a tea because it's evening. I also have in front of me, there we go, a lemon Diet Coke. I don't like this as much as same as lime. Anyway, let's dive into some of these questions. Don't forget, I haven't edited these episodes, and here I've just realized that two of the questions I've already edited it while I was because sometimes when I'm recording it, I'll say the words and then I go, that, even though I've rehearsed it in advance, it's only when you're reading them out that sometimes you go through and go, nah, that needs to go. I'll get rid of that. So two I've already got rid of. So question number one, what year did we, i.e. Britain, start implementing gun control? Question number two and three you won't get, but this was an interesting little statistic at the start that I put in there about gun control. So this was actually the line, I've taken this out. Ever since we've introduced gun control, and that, so currently we have about 30 gun deaths a year in Great Britain, which is not much. In comparison, I hate to say this, to America. Sorry, guys, I'm going to pick on you guys again because of your lack of gun control, and in some places there's almost none. You have 19,500 gun deaths every year. And given the fact that your population is only five times more than ours, we have 30 gun deaths a year because we still have some pricks walking around going, you get me, me as gangster, me as shoot you. We have 30 gun deaths a year. You have 53 a day. A day. Yeah, you got a problem. You got a problem. So that was one of the quiz questions, but it's not there anymore. So that was question number two. How many gun deaths are there in Britain every year? There's 30. You can have that as a point if you want to. And how many are there in America? 19,500. 19,500, and we have 30. What the fuck? Question number four. Where was DAS born? That, i.e., what city? Question number five, what did the seven locks of his hair represent as a boy? Question number six, what was Das doing when he first saw, I'm going to say God, but it was kind of a spiritual being. What was he doing? Question number seven, what accident happened to the second buffalo who he rescued with a miracle? Ooh. Question number eight, what year did Das come to England? Question number nine, what was the name of the operation which ended in more than 650 deaths? And question number 10, that operation occurred at which temple? So let's dive into some extra stuff. This is kind of stuff that didn't make it into that episode. Obviously, the really juicy stuff I'm saving for bad nanometers. You're welcome. It is a lot of the kind of the background to this I kind of got from the Dastaram website. So a lot of this because I'm not well knowledgeable about Sikhism, therefore I actually went direct to their website. And so where there is quotes here, I have taken them direct from their website. So when I say their followers, this is exactly what the website says. So but his premonition of his death. Now obviously a lot of the things that were written about him were written post. As with anyone, as with history, you have to be kind of quite speculative about history. So, you know, people may say this is what happened, but don't forget this is a perspective. Also, with him being a holy man, things will be slightly heightened. So, it says here, those who understood his message continue to do the work that he started, remembering what he said. Do not love my physical body, but the power behind it. Life is an unreal image, an allotted time span for a short period. Death is reality. Das was a person who could tell you about the past, present and the future. And moments before the assassination, someone in the congregation asked, "What is death?" And he replied, "Wait 2 minutes and you will see it with your own eyes." Now, I don't see that's on the website from his followers. I don't see that on the police report. I don't see that in the limited witness statements that we had access to. But that didn't mean it happened. It just means it wasn't recorded. Obviously, with the Sikh faith having been kind of divided down one side, you've got. I'm going to say half, but it's more scattered than that. You've got one side kind of moving towards kind of as mentioned, the Khalistan, which is that they wanted a Sikh. Have I got it written here? I might have kept it. No, I'm put it in this section. One half were kind of deciding whether they wanted part of the Punjab to be kind of the Sikh held area. Some wanted all of the Punjab to be kind of Sikh controlled. And whereas with Das, he was more, because he's Indian and even though he's Sikh, even though his religion is Sikh, he's actually from a Hindu family. So he's more kind of Indian. So he wants to stay part of independent and unified, well, hopefully unified India. So as you can see, some people would not say he was controversial. Some people would say, you know, he's just a peaceful, holy man and he doesn't believe in fighting and, you know, he just wants everyone to be nice and happy together, whereas some people see him as controversial because he's anti-violence and because he wants to be part of India. He doesn't want to be part of kind of the Khalistan, as mentioned. So he condemned violence by Sikhs fighting for an independent state in speeches in Britain and India. He was defiant about his refusal to be persuaded to change his views by the threat of a gun. He was reported saying, "I still hold my independent views as a human right, which I will continue to fight for." As a Sikh leader, he himself received many death threats and said bloodshed and violence must always be condemned. Hit many death threats by militant separatist Sikhs as he was seen as a heretic by fanatical groups. What angered them most was his stance on that there should be a unified India, and he openly condemned violence by Sikhs. So it's interesting that people hate him because he's anti-violence, but then again, you know, we've seen that quite often in the world, that people go, "Oh, what are you, some kind of idiot? You don't believe in violence." And it's like, some people are just naturally, inherently predestined towards violence. Some people are towards peace, which is kind of interesting, isn't it? 1986, a man with a sword stormed an open-air prayer meeting in Birmingham and tried to kill him. We really don't know much about that. I kind of had to search around, but there wasn't a huge amount. I'm going to read those stories that ended up in the press because we only got a glimpse of them in there. So Sunday Mirror, 7th of September, 1986. I'll be honest, before I approached this, I didn't know anything about Darshan Das. So actually going in and learning more about him was actually quite fascinating. This article in the Sunday Mirror, headline, "Man Awaiting Triple Heart Bypass, John Kensett, 45 of London, says he has been miraculously cured and has cancelled his operation, which, in in commas, surgeons say he needed it to save his life after meeting the guru 8 months ago. John said, I feel fit and healthy and only very occasionally get a small pain in my chest, but not enough to take medication. I have become vegetarian and do not smoke or drink. Oh, man, that may have done it for you. Darshan Das touched my hands and then recited a prayer and told me to repeat it each night. But a Harley Street heart specialist commented, I think it would be wrong to put too much credence on an Indian holy man. Well, of course, science people would say that. Which is kind of interesting. Kind of interesting that even in some sects of kind of what you'd say modern medicine, they still today go, oh, acupuncture, what a load of old baloney. But, you know, it's been around for 2,000 years. And I've used it myself when you know, I've got injured. I'm going to have it on my back soon because I had it on my knees when they went a couple of years ago. And my shin, I've got really bad shin splints. And even though I was told it would take months to repair, they actually did it in about 2 weeks. So actually, sometimes, you know, religion can help with repairing. It's a state of mind. It's peacefulness, change of diet. You know, all these things can help. But also, you know, if you believe in religion, it's a power of positivity. And you know what? Even though I'm not a religious person, maybe there is something there. Maybe there is a God. I personally don't think there is, but maybe there is a God. Maybe he's looking down. Maybe if you ask him nicely, he will help you out. This other article I found was quite negative. So this was Sunday Mercury, 15th of November, 1987, which I had to double check a couple of times because that's 4 days after his death. But it says, an unnamed Birmingham businessman claimed he lost his family because of the activities of the Sikh religious leader. He was said to be too frightened to be named, but that he is now separated from his parents and his sisters because they have fallen under the influence of Darshan Das. There's a lot of articles out there, and I found quite a few forums online, which really helped with the background details of a lot of people who kind of said, oh, it's a cult. And things like that. But, you know, people would say that. But so I tried to get across a balance in this. He said the self-proclaimed guru preyed on the fears of women and encouraged followers to shun non-believers, even members of their own family. He alleged that Mrs. Das sold bottles of water for £11, claiming that they had healing powers, and demanded cash donations for his sect. Instead of traditional Sikh temple gifts such as salt, sugar and flour. The businessman said his family was split in 1982 when Mr. Das promised to cure his mother's illness and ensnared other relatives. He said, he ruined my family and many others in Birmingham. They were told to look down on other Sikhs. He came to Britain because there was no money here. He is not interested in traditional gifts, as mentioned, kind of flour, sugar, salt, only cash. I have secretly filmed him on video laughing at the people he claimed to have healed. So that's that one of the articles. We don't know a huge amount about Rajinder Singh Bhatt, who was, the police say, was the ringleader of the operation. He was 37 at the time, unemployed, lived at Burns Avenue in Southall, which is literally two roads south of where the school was. Born in February 1950, an Orthodox Sikh, a traditionalist, believed in a separate state for Sikhs and that the use of violence was necessary to achieve it, and that he firmly believes that there are 10 gurus, whereas this is kind of where the big problem is, because obviously Das is hailed as a guru, therefore, you know, if you believe that there's 10 gurus and that's it, with him coming along and being inverted commas the 11th, that's kind of seen as quite heretical. Interesting, in the interviews, he spoke Punjabi. He'd been in the UK since 1970. I can't remember if that was one of the quiz questions. If it is, I don't care. He'd been there since 1972. Bhatt claimed that he had no real understanding of English, but he'd lived in the UK for more than 15 years, and others claimed that he could speak English. He wasn't fluent, but he could speak English. And although when he was being interviewed, he had to have translators coming in, he kept saying that he didn't know what was going on. He kept saying that he had a headache throughout, even though he'd been assessed. And they said that even though he'd been beaten up by the worshippers who kind of floored him, he was saying, do you know, oh, my head hurts, I can't do this interview. Interestingly, he'd never spoken to Das before, and he hadn't threatened him prior, so this was kind of a new idea. There's some kind of talk online that people say that the operation, which is one of the quiz questions, that happened in 1984, that moment had kind of radicalized a lot of young men, especially, according to them, a lot of young men who were in the International Sikh Youth Federation. I can't remember which one it was. Could be, might not be. There's a lot of anger out there, even today. Like, if you were to look at a lot of the videos for Das on there, you will see underneath, you'll see a lot of comments, and you'll see a lot of people who are either pro or anti. There's no real grey area on there at all. So obviously, both culprits were strict Sikhs. They really did not like Darshan Das. They regarded his activities as heretical and his preachings as blasphemy, but said he only recognised, 10 gurus and did not want fake sages. He said of his motive, because he used to read the prayers out of the Guru Granth Sahib, which is obviously the Sikh scriptures, he'd call himself a guru, and being a Singh, and that's kind of the, when you're a Sikh, men become Sings and women become cores, and that kind of becomes part of your name. I couldn't bear this because after the 10 gurus, there's no other guru except Guru Granth Sahib. He was spoiling our culture. We don't want fake sages. Any person can read the prayers from the Guru Granth Sahib, but he can't call himself a guru. We know very little about Manjit Singh Sundar as well. He was 25 years old, a factory worker from Rectory Gardens in Vicarage Street in Oldbury, Sandwell. He had one minor prior conviction. We don't know what it was. It wasn't in the police files, but the judge at the time said it was minor. And he was born in August 1960. As we know, they'd attended 6 or 7 of the meetings in advance over the 3 or 4 months prior. The first 2 or 3, Bhatt had done it by himself. And then when he recruited Sundar to his group, they regularly attended the Wednesday evening meeting at the Dormers Wells High School, which was always the same format, always the same timings, always the same room, often the same people. So it was often easy to kind of assess what was going to go on. The gun itself, some people say that he got it from outside of a Sikh temple in Handsworth. I think that's speculation because in the court records, it says that he met, inverted commas, a black man in the street in Southall. Which kind of makes more sense, only because he is Southall based as opposed to Handsworth based. That man, the black man, inverted commas, couldn't be tracked down, but said he'd given him £250, which, if you consider at the time, the police found out that when he was a plastics worker, he hadn't been working for a year, he was earning about 100 quid a week at the time, and even though he was unemployed, he wasn't receiving any benefits at the time. So where did he get that £250 from? We don't know. There is speculation that someone was funding him in order to get the guns, but the police were unable to track down who that person was or where the money had come from. Bhatt said that he'd raised the money himself. Witnesses in the episode, there are obviously quite a lot of witnesses there, and the police were able to get a hell of a lot of statements. It was a really difficult crime scene for the police because, as you can appreciate, it's a small room. There's, well, a small room which has got 200 people in it. So it was a busy room. So there's a lot going on, a lot of violence going on, a lot of panic, a lot of people moving around, a lot of fighting, a lot of confusion. So the crime scene was a bit of a mess, but they're able to do what they could with it at the time. And let's not forget, it was 1987 as well. One witness said, it was horrible. The Holy Master and his disciples lay bleeding at the front and the crowd was terrified. I saw a man come in wrapped in a blanket. I think that is Sundar, but Sundar in none of the records is stated as wearing a blanket. And I just thought he was a follower until he pulled out a gun. I did not believe it was a real gun. He started shooting. People were screaming and running out. Everyone panicked. As people ran out, because his houses immediately opposite, the neighbour spoke of opening their doors to the sounds of women running and screaming from the school hall. One said, two women were banging on their door and yelling at us to let them in. They were terrified. It was all very distressing. I think they imagined, you know, people are in there with guns and you've no idea what's going on. There's obviously public outrage. I've kind of done. Oh, the New Life magazine said the International Sikh Youth Federation said it denied any connection with the incident. On the contrary, they believe it was a sectarian murder due to infighting in the group. They even said that Nanak Dam believed that women gave their allegiance to the guru rather to their husbands, and this could have been something to do with the death. Again, they're kind of identifying Das as kind of a cult leader. His followers denied this. Das convinced many to become vegetarian, to give up alcohol. He was a simple man who said he was not a Sikh or a Hindu, but a human being. Punjab Times also reported that the International Sikh Youth Federation praised the efforts of the murderers. Obviously, I couldn't find any proof of that in there. The bodies of Das, his follower Yoga Singh, who's originally from Kingston Road in Southall, and Mr. Panesar, could not be handed over for burial until after the trial. The committal hearing was originally held at Marylebone Magistrates Court. They then had to move it down to Lambeth Magistrates Court. I think at the time, both men were being held at Brixton Prison, hence it was being held at Lambeth Magistrates Court, that's south of the water. And then they were transported in an armoured van owing to the fear of uprisals, and at each court there was tight security and armed police. That was also at the Old Bailey as well. The judge said, but I am satisfied that you were the ringleader. You have lied continuously throughout in a dishonest way to avoid punishment for your disgusting behaviour. You provided the weaponry and the ammunition, and it was you who shot Das in the back of the head. I've in mind of your age and your unblemished record, he didn't have a criminal record, your hard work in life, and that you have heard, that I have heard about you and your religious enthusiasm. Because there is absolutely no excuse for this disgraceful, pre-planned behaviour, I recommend that in your case you serve a minimum of 30 years. In total, he served 38 years in total. And I think that's it, folks. I think that's all I have on that. So let's do the quiz questions. Obviously, we'll miss out the ones that I've already edited out of the episode. Don't forget, I haven't edited the episode yet, so they might not appear in this episode. Question number one. What year did we start implementing gun control? It was 1903, 121 years ago. Hear that, America? 121 years ago. There we go. Now we live in peace. Well, sort of. Question two, let's dispose of. Question three, we'll dispose of. Question four, where was Das born? It was in Batal in the Punjab. Question number five, what did the seven locks of hair represent as a boy? In Hindu faith, it was the seven-headed great snake. Question number six, what was Das doing when he first saw, I'm going to say inverted commas, God, i.e. a spiritual being? He was feeding the family's buffaloes, as we all do. Question number seven, what accident happened to the second buffalo, who he rescued with a miracle? It had fallen into a well of snakes. Question number eight, what year did Das come to England? It was 1979. Question number nine, what was the name of the operation which ended with more than 650 deaths? It was called Operation Blue Star. And question number 10, that operation occurred at which temple? It was the Golden Temple. So there we go, folks. There we go. Oh, that was a case that you won't get anywhere else because it's a bloody nightmare to research. So I hope that made sense. Once again, thank you for listening to Murder Mile. Next week is another single episode of another case you won't have heard of anywhere else. You're welcome. That's what I try, is to bring you things that you can't get anywhere else, or try and find you details about cases that just no one has ever heard before. So there we go. Hope you're enjoying that. Have a good week, folks. Stay safe. Be good. I'm going to finish off my Diet Coke. I'm going to pop on a fire. I'm going to rest my back. I'm going to have some dinner because it's gone nighttime already. Ugh. Have a good one, folks. Stay safe. Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.